said you saw a girl with a yellow dress. Is that someone that you knew?
No, I just felt sick. I feel better being outside.
I'm not gonna hurt you. Don't worry. You're not gonna believe me. And I need you to remember what I'm saying.
Okay?
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me, and I passed it to you. Back in the car. It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. Whatever helps it get close to you. It could look like anyone, but there's only one of it. Sometimes I think it looks like people you love just to hurt you.
There was an old woman at school today. She was staring at me. It was like she was following me.
Did you know her?
No, but she freaked me out. I didn't even go back to class.
Did she say something to you?
Hugh told me that he passed it on to me. Something was gonna follow me.
That's all bullshit, Jamie.
Hi, this is Larry Zerner from Friday the 13th, Part 3, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 122. And this time we're taking another one of Joe's slightly controversial picks, perhaps, when we zoom to the modern day, or a couple of years ago, or a year ago, with It Follows. We're discussing whether or not it's indeed a slasher movie, or how much of a slasher movie we can claim it to be. But I think it's going to be an interesting discussion. So before we get onto that, how are we all doing on this hopefully a sunny day? It's lovely and sunny here in Bristol. Eric, did you watch Eurovision last night?
No, because I'm not a walking cliche like some people. Well, I assume you stayed up watching it, waving your flag, your Union Jack.
No. Well, actually, because this show is going out in a week's time, so it's going to be a bit passé. But, no, I was around for dinner and some friend's house last night, and we ended up watching some of it. It was quite funny, but it was, it was all a bit daft. But that's Eurovision for you. But it had, bizarrely, had Justin Timberlake in the middle section.
Also, apparently, Australia, which is, I don't think it's in Europe, came very, very close to winning it.
Yes, they did, until the public vote, and then they voted in Ukrainian dirge about genocide. So
That sounds like right up your street. You love dirges about genocide. It's what Susie sings about all the time, isn't it?
Well, I do like a good dirge, but I prefer it not to be kind of like that kind of cod opera-atic kind of, Celine Dion crap. That kind of thing, which is all Eurovision. But it was quite, it was quite funny. Sweden was taking the piss out of itself. So anyway, but we always always mention Eurovision, and I know people on the other side of the Atlantic obviously don't. Actually, no, I think it was shown in the
United
States.
I think that's why Justin Timberlake was on it, because it was shown actually this year in the States.
Yes, that's right, for the first time, and live streamed to China as well. Bizarrely.
Ooh.
So I know it's kind of truly international. But anyway, apart from Eurovision, Eric, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you very much, yes.
And I believe you've got some recently seen, haven't you? But
I have some recently seen, of old movies that I've seen in the cinema this weekend, which has given me a bit of jet lag, but...
Okay, well, we'll come on to that very shortly, but looking forward to hearing what you thought of those. But Nathan, how are you doing?
Aside from allergies killing me still, I'm doing all right.
So it's a bit like It Follows, isn't it, the allergies, they kind of...
Yes, they won't go away. It Follows must be about allergies, like it's like an underlying message about allergies.
Well,
and it's also there's an underlying message about annoying friends with big glasses, which I'll get onto later.
Okay. Well, hopefully your allergies will clear up at some point soon. When's the allergy season end?
I don't know.
November.
I wish it would end soon.
Well, fingers crossed for you. And Joseph, how are you doing?
I'm really good. Mm. I'm mimicking the girl eating the sandwich at the end of
Follows. Okay, I'll get onto that a bit later. That really annoys me.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I never knew somebody eating a sandwich could be so annoying, but yes. Apparently it is.
Well, it's actually unseasonably cool here
was
today.
It? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, it's unseasonably warm here.
Quite chilly. I mean, it's been like very hot and humid the last few days, but it's rather cool outside right now, and I'm enjoying it. So,
cool. Okay. Right. Well,
it's a scorching. Wait for this. Oh yeah. 14 degrees Celsius in Dublin.
Oh, got straps. I can hear straps in the background.
Mm-hmm. They were playing with a plastic bag, and I took it away so it wouldn't make noise during the podcast. So she's very upset with me right now.
Oh, worst parents ever.
I know.
We did have Argento in here about just about 10 minutes before we started, so he may make an appearance later or not, which you'll see. But before we get onto that, recently seen, I think let's start with Eric, because I know you've been catching up, like you say, with some old films. Do you want to tell us?
Yeah,
a bit
I went
about?
To see. I travelled to London on Thursday evening, and then Friday evening went to a Friday the 13th marathon for the day that was in it. They showed parts 1 to 4 at the Prince Charles Cinema, which is just off Leicester Square. So the show started at 11:30 at night and ran through to 6:15 in the morning, which was quite an endurance test for somebody with a very strict sleeping pattern like I would have. So part 1 and 4 were projected digitally and looked like pristine. And then parts 2 and 3 were very old, tatty UK 35mm prints, which were, you know, wonderfully retro. Part 2 even had an old British X certificate in front of it. Part 1 was... I'd seen part 1 on the big screen before, about 10 years ago. So it was great to see that again on the screen. But what I was really excited about was maybe parts 2 and 3, which were great seeing them in a sort of tatty, scratchy form, and there'd be jump cuts around the real changes because, you know, the condition of the prints weren't terrific, but that's kind of what I wanted. Then when part 4 rolled around, it was back to a pristine quality. At that stage, I was falling in and out of consciousness, as you could probably imagine, because I think part 4 rolled around about 4:45 in the morning. I remember Crispin Glover going to put on the record and thinking, yes, here comes the big dance sequence. And then sort of the next thing I know, the dance sequence is almost over. And I'm like, hang on. I just fell asleep literally for, you know, a minute, which was a shame. But I did manage to persevere to the very end, catching most of the movies. Certainly for 1 and 2, I was well awake and alert, and it was great. So it was my first time seeing 2, 3, and 4 on the big screen. The crowd, about 50 people, I think, were there, and they were all, you know, good-humoured, respectful. You know, there was no troublemakers in the audience, so it was good fun. And we all had our picture taken as we came out of the cinema, and it goes up on the Survivors Wall, the All-Night Movie Marathon Survivors Wall on the Prince Charles Cinema Facebook page, so I'll be up there soon. But it's a great cinema, great place. I highly recommend it. Lovely, comfortable seats. They're these plush seats that actually recline. So, which it probably would have made more sense for them to be uncomfortable. It would have kept me awake more. Good fun. And great to see some of my favorite movies up on the big screen after all these years. Okay. Part 3, by the way, sorry, was shown in 2D because I don't think they have 3D facilities, or I didn't have access to a 3D print of the movie. But it was still great fun to see it. And you played Shelley there, or Larry Zerner, sorry, in the opening of the thing. And his character, anytime he was on screen, got a big laugh. And the crowd all booed Vera when she declines Shelley's advances sort of in part 3. So it was good fun.
Excellent.
And Crazy Ralph, for some reason, turned out to be the sort of... Anytime he appeared on the screen in parts 1 and 2, he got a big round of applause.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
No, that sounds fun. Because, let's say, the only ones I've seen, the Friday 13th, the first one on the big screen, at a retro showing about 15 years ago, and I saw part 3 in 3D at the BFI about 10 years ago.
I'd still love to see that in 3D. It was great.
Really good in 3D. It's such a shame. I don't know why Paramount don't release it in proper 3D. They haven't, have they?
Yeah, but they are bringing out Jaws 3 in proper 3D this summer on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I'll have to pick that up because I saw that at the cinema. That was one of my first 3D movies I saw at the cinema.
And was that? Can you remember if the 3D was good? Because there's lots of pokey stuff coming out of the screen in that movie.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, actually. I kind of remember back in the day with 3D movies that you actually, you know, people reaching up to try and touch things that sticking out the screen. which you just don't get on you don't get on TVs, do you? Or when you or the 3D that I've seen at the cinema these days. I mean, they're so restrained, aren't they, with the gimmicks? And I know it's a bugbear of Nathan's, isn't it, about the how restrained they are when you want things poking your eye out, don't you? Really?
Yeah, I mean, that's just the purpose of 3D, and I just don't understand. You know, Eric once said depth schmepth, and I agree with that.
Absolutely. But no, well, thank you, Eric. That sounds really good. Anyway, is there anything else you want to talk about? Obviously, we don't want to have the same thing last time,
which
with Nathan.
It's probably why I'm ill-prepared for It Follows, I'm afraid, because I thought I would be able to... Well, I did sleep on the plane coming back, because I went straight from the Prince Charles Cinema to London City Airport yesterday and flew home. So I was hoping to do all my prep yesterday, but I was just a bit too dozy. And that's why I missed the glory of Eurovision, is just that I had to go to bed eventually. Yeah, because I don't know how those kids in Nightmare on Elm Street do it, where they stay awake for days on end. I'm lucky if I can go sort of 16 hours without sleeping. I'm like a cat, really.
Yeah, you'd be rubbish, wouldn't you? Wouldn't be a good Nancy.
I would not be a good Nancy. I'd be a good Argento.
Yeah. Good Jesse.
Yeah, good Jesse. But okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Eric. Joseph, how about you? What have you been watching recently?
I haven't really watched anything this week, but I did. Well, I learned about this a while back, but I'd forgotten about it. But apparently within the next month or month and a half, Chattanooga's getting its own version of the Alamo Draft House. It's called Cinerama. It's called Cinerama, and they're going to show, you know, like independent films, and they're going to have, like, you know, blocks of old movies and horror films and things like that, like on weekends. So I'm really looking forward to that. I can't wait to finally have something around here.
When's that opening?
Well, they're supposed to open in April, but they ran into a few financial issues, but they raised the money, and they're if you go down Main Street downtown, they have the sign up on the old building. It's an old grocery building. I think they're trying to finish up their seating, and I think they're opening within a month or so. I think that's on their Facebook page, but I can't wait to see if they, you know, show some really good stuff. So it should be fun.
Cool. That sounds really good. So it's kind of strange they're opening it in an old grocery store, because presumably there must have been loads of old cinemas knocking about.
Well, the guy opening it, he also runs a film festival here in town. They couldn't really find the building that they wanted, but it was like this old, I think it was like an old, like, green, grocery store. And it was the layout. They just liked the layout, and they just basically just converted everything into like a 200 seat cinema. So it should be pretty interesting when it opens.
Cool. That sounds good. So, I know it's only been a week since we recorded, isn't it? So, not much to talk about. Is there anything else you wanted to mention, or?
No, that's nothing else this week. So,
okay, well, thank you. Talking of retro screenings, I did see the that retro screening somewhere of The Last Slumber Party, which made me think of you, Nathan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I wanted to go see it so bad. I'm so sad that I
couldn't. Where was it?
It was at the Alamo Draft House in Texas.
And there was an actress from the film at it as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, Justin's favorite heroine, Chris Jan Jensen.
Yes, she's a kind of larger lady these days, isn't she?
Well, I mean, she's in her, like, 60s.
Is she?
Yeah, it happens.
No, but she can't be in her 60s if she was playing a teenager in 1987.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
That never happened.
Yeah. Carolyn Monroe?
No, was she really in her 60s now? Was she not playing was she a 40-year-old when she's playing, 30-year-old when she's playing that?
I think she was in her late 20s, or maybe into the 30s. I mean, I was assuming she was in her 60s because I think that's what I had read, but I might be wrong.
Okay. Well, she looked like she's having a lovely time. I'm sure the audience doesn't, but I'm sure she looked like she's having a nice time. So anything you've been watching, Nathan? And obviously I won't interrupt you this time.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you better not. You'll incur my wrath.
I know. That's what I'm scared of.
The only thing I really watched this week is I watched an amazing film from the 80s called The Forest.
Oh, dear.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Well,
I really love The Forest. I think it's a lot of fun. It's it's even got a few scenes that are kind of creepy. But it's got a great setting. You know, I mean, I know the woods is used a lot in a lot of films, but this one makes the woods look kind of, you know, foreboding, I thought. And, you know, it's even got Battle of the Sexes. It's not boring.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, there's like...
I mispronounced the word, sorry.
There's a man with a hunting knife, like, stalking people in the forest. I mean, that's like slasher movie gold.
Yeah.
But no, I like the film. I thought the inclusion of ghost children was a bit odd, but it kind of works for this film. So I give it 2 thumbs up.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you will pick it at some point in the future.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Actually, talking of picks, Joseph, you put up on one of the Alashan brothers' picks was something that the board could choose, the Facebook group. And we had that unprecedented responses, didn't we?
Yeah, I can't believe how many responses we had. So I'm not sure what it's going to be yet. I'm going to wait till like the end of this month, and then I'll weed through them and see which one had the most votes.
That'll be interesting. So, because there's a couple of kind of big slashers, 80s, well, but, you know, in our kind of our terms, like Final Exam and things we haven't done yet, which a lot of people seem to be hankering for, so that'll be interesting. But at the risk of interrupting Nathan again, anything else, Nathan, do you want to talk about?
No, that's the only thing, is that awesome, awesome, fun movie.
Okay, right. Well, thank you. I think I said last time we were going to watch Demons 2, and did watch Demons 2 on Friday night with a friend introducing to Italian horror. And we talked about it quite a lot last time, so I'm not going to go into it massively. But again, it was a lot of fun and great soundtrack. I've forgotten how fun Sally was in that.
So she's amazing.
She is amazing.
She's Inga-esque.
Yes. Well, you can imagine her chasing after you through your dreams, you know, and kind of like running. If you see her running towards a TV screen from inside, you know it's going to be trouble.
I think she's scary before she gets possessed by the demons, to be honest.
Well, I wanted to ask you, like, did you prefer Sally before or after possession?
Before, when her sleeves are going back and forth.
I know, it's just, she was maybe a tad spoiled.
I don't understand how she can have so many friends.
I don't understand it either.
And she behaves like that. I'd be mortified if I behaved like that.
It's also
To claw one of her friend's arms like that.
I know. That's really rude.
It's terrible.
The one thing I thought was a bit not curious about it was, you know, like they had, because a lot of the parallels with the first film, because, you know, they had the punks in the car like they did in the first one. And I think there was quite a few, well, it was a number of people playing different characters from the first one, like the punk in the car. And the first one played the security guard, didn't he, in this one. The one who gets slashed in the face and falls in front of the lift, but it was had that thing with the punks coming to the party, to Sally's party, and driving for half the movie, and then they just get into a car crash, don't they? And then they're not part of the movie anymore, are they? After that,
yep.
Which is kind of curious, but yeah, no, it's fun seeing Asia Argento as well, kind of in a, you know, a kind of role. And I think it was funny, actually, that my friends who were watching it, they said, oh, this is much creepier than the first one.
What?
I know. And they said up until the point where the gremlin bursts out the kid and then runs around like the sock puppet chasing the pregnant lady around her apartment, then they went, oh, it's not actually that creepy now. Because it just became very silly. But in a glorious, glorious way. So
a pregnant lady is the Southern Belle from Body Count. I can't remember her character's name.
Okay.
What was her name? Can you remember, Nathan?
In Demons 2.
In Body Count.
Oh, in Body Count.
She's the one I'm talking about.
Her real name is Nancy Brilli, but I don't know her character's name in Body Count.
Remember, she rang into the podcast. She rang the feedback line once. No? None of you remember.
No, I do remember vaguely.
She did? I don't remember that.
Well, not really her. I think it was Eric.
No, it was Eric.
Oh, I was about to say, I don't remember that.
Yeah, but Justin, when you're holding your parties, do you behave like Sally?
You're off
in your bedroom sulking about what T-shirt to wear.
If I don't get my own way, yeah. If they weren't let me play Susie.
Yeah,
because that's what I thought.
Well, Justin, I just got a message from our dear friend. I think he's online.
Okay, right. Well, Let's just pause things here. And we're back, and we have with us a surprise guest who is joining us a little bit into the show. Johnny Krug is on the show. So, Johnny Krug, how are you doing?
Good. I just woke up, and I am doing awesome. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, there you go. That's a lovely surprise, because we had planned to have you on the show, Johnny, and then we couldn't get hold of you, and we thought maybe it's a time zone thing. So we're delighted to have you, because obviously I know you were looking forward to talking about It Follows, weren't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, just say Johnny Krug's an asshole. Like, pretty much, that's the thing. Is I was so excited to be on the show, and fuck, I don't know what happened.
Well, that's the important thing, is you're here, so that is all good. Well, we just talked about what we've been watching recently. Is there anything you wanted to? Have you seen anything of note?
Oh, wait a minute! I don't think Nick's finished yet.
Who hasn't finished?
You don't want to cut his wrath or anything. So.
The only thing I watched was The Legacy from 1978.
Okay. Yeah.
Have any of you seen that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen it.
That movie is, if you go into it with I don't know. I went into it thinking 10 Little Indians, like it said. Hmm. And I don't know, like for me, it didn't play out like an Agatha Christie novel.
It's
got the one. Yeah. Is that the one with the cat?
It is the one.
Yeah, the cat.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I remember that one.
But it's got all the.
Is it not steps. Sam Elliott or not? Mm. Is it?
Yes.
And Catherine Ross.
Yeah. And that's got what's his name from The Who as well, isn't it? Roger Daltrey, and he's a tracheotomy.
Oh yeah, so, yeah. Mm.
That's
I like the mirror death when the mirror shatters and like cuts up the rich woman.
I like the bit, is it because they try and get away, don't they? Going around all the narrow English country lanes, so they can't get away from the place. So, mm-hmm. So that's got that kind of like weird sort of genuine nightmare logic about it, isn't it? Which is kind of, obviously we were talking about that with It Follows coming up, but yeah, that's a fun movie. You don't hear much,
you know,
about it
and.
Anymore.
Oh, sorry, Justin. See, I interrupted you that time.
Oh, Nathan.
This is your turn for revenge.
Fight,
I know,
fight,
it's
fight.
Vengeance time. I only wanted to bring up...
sorry, Nathan, I want to talk now.
Oh, damn it. I only wanted to bring up the movie Burnt Offerings and tell everybody out there that's listening, number one, I've realized that I'm a moron.
Just now,
black movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I had come to this realization because I've seen Burnt Offering several times, and I still don't understand the ending. So, if anybody wants to explain that ending to me, I would really appreciate it because I don't get it.
Well, I think the realization they came to is that they left the offerings in the oven for too long, so they
got burnt. So yeah. They forgot to factor in that was a fan of him, so.
Was that the twist?
That was the twist.
Yes.
Well, write in if you know what the ending to Burnt Offerings meant. Because
just give them what the ending's about.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm not actually sure if I've seen Burnt Offerings. I think, is that the one that's
got... I can't remember the ending. I can't remember anything about it apart from Oliver Reed.
Is it got a creepy chauffeur in it? Is it that one?
I think there is a chauffeur in it, yes. Okay. I haven't seen it in a while. It popped in my head when Johnny was talking about The Legacy, because those movies kind of remind me of each other. It's a big mansion and people in a mansion, and there's not many movies with that.
Yeah. Burnt Offerings, I don't remember it. Didn't MGM UA put that out in a big gray oversized box on VHS?
Yeah, I think it's got...
like the house?
And a face and lightning.
Yeah, okay. I haven't seen that in a long time. I don't really remember much about it, so maybe I should watch it. Yeah, that's a good idea. Mm.
If I sounded weird at first, it's because I was rushing around to get my inhaler, because I just woke up, so...
Oh, sorry. Well, it adds
I'm sorry. It adds... I was out of breath and stuff, trying to get my nebulizer, my inhaler.
Well, no, that's no problem at all, because it just goes. It adds to the immediacy of the podcast. We're all about chaos here, aren't we?
The truth is, he's probably being followed.
Yes, possibly. Eric, have you got a big grey box?
That's green.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm going to the doctor on Monday, so.
Okay, fair enough. So, yes, okay, well, shall we, if that's everything, have I given you enough time, Johnny? Have you got anything else you wanted to add, or...?
No, I'm good.
You're good. Okay, we've caught your breath. So, actually, you catch your breath now, because we're going to play. This is the trailer for It Follows, and here it is.
I used to daydream about being old enough to go on dates. I had this image of myself holding hands with a really cute guy. Just having some sort of freedom, I guess.
Jane, I'm sorry.
Oh. You're not going to believe me, and I need you to remember what I'm saying. This thing, it's going to follow you. Somebody gave it to me, and I passed it to you.
Wherever you are, it's somewhere walking straight for you. All you can do is pass it along to someone else.
What exactly is supposed to be following you?
I don't know.
Just pass it along.
You believe me, right?
Nothing's gonna happen.
See? Everything's okay.
Is something wrong with me?
If it kills her, it goes straight down the line to whoever started it.
Gonna be here sooner or later.
For 19-year-old Jay, fall should be about school, boys, and weekends out at the lake. But after a seemingly innocent sexual encounter, she finds herself plagued by strange visions and the inescapable sense that someone or something is following her. Jay and her teenage friends must now find a way to escape the horrors that seem to be only a few steps behind in this critically acclaimed chiller. For me, It Follows was sort of a case of, I guess, hype trumps experience. Actually, to be fair, the hype was legitimate, but my cinema viewing was nothing short of disappointing, to say the least. I had to deal with what's kind of become the now requisite crowd of texting hipsters and all the noisy chatter that comes with them. You know, try as I might, getting into the film kind of proved fruitless. And I honestly left the theater feeling kind of angry and nonplussed. However, you know, upon viewing the film in the privacy of my home and on a large HDTV, I was able to kind of, you know, really appreciate, you know, the film and what it was trying to do. It Follows, to me at least, is essentially Halloween for the modern crowd, though I think it's a little smarter than much of its audience, present company excluded, of course. On that note, I think its staying power and its certainly its box office, you know, bonanza is something that kind of confuses me, seeing as it's a little more cerebral than the typical teenage horror stock we get at the cinemas today. Is it a slasher film? Absolutely not, in my opinion. But it's close to comfort with its, you know, its John Carpenter-esque score, that great score, by the way, and that looming sense of it's right outside waiting, kind of sense of dread that it carries. It, you know, of course, it toys with sexuality in much of the same manner as slasher films, you know, where sex equals death and all, you know, here sex equals imminent danger and eventual death unless you get treated. Here the twist being you better have sex or else, you know, a similar conceit was attempted in Cherry Falls, but to much lesser success, in my opinion. I guess you could kind of call it a parable on the dangers of unprotected sex. Though I'm not really certain if there are any allusions to condom use in the film. I mean, that would be even scarier, knowing you can shield your gator and still have regrets later. you know, moreover, on the slasher spectrum, the film, you know, is permeated with lots of I guess I'd call them close call chase sequences. It's more suspenseful than that quiet day they have at the beach, where the it in quotation marks comes up right behind Jay and starts pulling her hair. And I love the image of completely naked and standing atop a house, you know, watching her as she, you know, leaves in the car. I think that scene's both just kind of weird and terrifying at the same time. It follows. It's also kind of curious amongst the casual observers in that it relies more so on an infinite regress scenario for the explanation behind it. I think a good majority of audiences, you know, at least those who faulted the film for this quote unquote explanation, I guess they were kind of waiting on pins and needles for someone or at least something to kind of exposit the origins of the monster. I don't know. I think it works better as a proposition one requires the support of proposition two requires the support of proposition three sort of thing. In my opinion, rather than someone explaining directly, it was someone from an ancient burial ground long ago, I don't know, which I guess would only placate curiosity at face value rather than satisfy it completely. I don't know. I like it when there's really no design behind the danger on screen. I think it's scarier that way. I guess I finally, before I pass this off, I want to mention the otherworldly feel to the film. It kind of sort of exists in kind of outside of our time and our dimension, you know. In here, people watch old black and white films on like really dated box TV sets, and their houses are kind of like littered with like tacky wallpaper and just icky wood paneling. You know, they permeate the backgrounds of the interior sequences. And it's like everyone dresses in this bulky, drab, dated clothing as well. And but yet at the same time, there's like modern vehicles and cell phones. And that one girl even has that strange tablet device it looks like a compact mirror, yet she's using it like an e-reader. I've never seen anything like that, you know, in our world. So it kind of adds to that otherworldly feel. I have a lot more to say about it, but for now, I'll turn it over to our guest, Johnny.
Yes. For me, like you were saying, the whole thing is kind of dreamlike. Like, it doesn't seem like it's in our world at all. I mean, the decor is all old school. I mean, there's tube TVs, you see antennas, there are the lamps, the couches, everything is very weird out of our time. But like you said, like that little clam e-reader she has is very, I don't know, it's very weird because I don't know how that would work. Like, would the screen be on one of the, would it be on the top or the bottom?
she was like thumbing through it and it went through both. I mean, that would be kind of like obtrusive trying to read like a Stephen King novel or something on it.
Yeah. Like it would be good for like, maybe like, I don't know, articles from Facebook, but not good for like a novel.
Yeah.
But, as far as the movie goes, this movie to me starts off like, especially from the beginning when she has sex with a guy that, abandoned, creepy, massive building they're like having sex in next to the beach, to me is already off-putting because what is that? Like, what beach has just some random ass like building sitting there that's just like decrepit and waiting to be demolished? So
yeah, he chose that to go have sex in. That's just, yeah,
exactly,
very, very like, romantic. Yeah.
Well, what woman does that? What woman's like, okay, first date? Or no, I guess she had mentioned him before in the movie. So what woman's like, even second date? Let's go park next to this fucking building that's about to be fucking demolished. So
that sounds about right, considering teenagers today. But whatever.
Well yeah. but you said they were in school, wasn't she in college?
Yeah, I think she's she's in college. But the school thing I was reading was back off the back of the Blu-ray. So.
Oh, okay. I was going to say yeah, because I'm pretty sure at some point she leaves her college class. But this movie, I mean, the cinematography is great. I love how it feels almost like a nightmare, the entire thing. It doesn't feel real. Like, none of it feels real. And I think that's pretty much it lends to the horror. Is that, like, when you're watching it, you're like, wow, this would never happen. Like, because no matter what you think about the movie, while you're watching it, you actually get this, I get this sense of, like, what in the hell is actually going on? And that's why it's so bothersome.
Yeah, it kind of, like, coming off of A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, it kind of goes well with that. Like, it's like a dream in the real world, or at least in some kind of alternate real world.
Oh, so, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's all I have.
Okay. How about our other late to the show, Eric?
Why am I late to the show?
Because you didn't have any background info.
That's shocking coming from you. Yeah, Eric. I said it. Okay, Eric. Well.
Eric.
My sleeves go back and forth. I told you. Yeah, I liked It Follows a lot more, I think, when I saw it for the first time in the cinema. It must have been about this time last year. Watching it again on home video, I mean, I still like the film, but it wasn't as enjoyable for me the second time around. The plot felt incredibly thin, and one of the characters really annoyed me, and I alluded to this earlier. It's the best friend with the big glasses and that clamshell e-reader. Just every time she's on, I just find her punchable. I don't know. She doesn't really do anything wrong, but
I think she's hot. Like, she's
really
like, yeah, I love her.
Oh, especially when she starts spouting her, like, she's reading her pseudo intellectual hipster novels, and she starts reading from them. I just want, and when she's eating the sandwich at the same time, I just
I'll give you that, because she doesn't know how to not talk with her mouth full.
She has issues with that, definitely. Yeah. So it was characters like her give it this kind of Wes Anderson type feel, and I can't stand Wes Anderson movies. And so the watching it for the second time, I was much more aware of these things, and they were kind of getting on my nerves. Now, I do like the dreamlike atmosphere that he creates, but it feels kind of hipsterish at times to me, which was kind of grating. And it also feels at times that he's trying his best not to make a horror movie, even though it is a horror movie. It reminded me of, like, The Babadook and The Witch, which are made by people who I would think imagine they are above making horror films. And that's the kind of vibe I get from It Follows.
Of the three, which do you prefer?
Oh, definitely It Follows is the best of the three. Yeah.
Okay.
But I just get this vibe that he thinks he's above horror films. Now, this may not be the case, but I feel he's desperately trying to make something. You know, he's trying to be sort of pseudo intellectual, and that was kind of grating on me as well. Now, this makes it sound like I hate the film, but I don't. I really do like it. There's bits in it that just feel odd, because at times it feels kind of arty and quirky, as I was saying, but then it has this real, it'll have a trashy B movie scene, like the scene where the teenagers are being thrown around the beach by an invisible force feels like it's from a different film, because it just doesn't fit in with the tone of the rest of the movie, I don't think. I mean, it's a scene I like and enjoy, but it feels very out of place. Like you were saying, I love the electronic music, and it is great, and it's atonal at times, and it feels like John Carpenter at other times. And again, the widescreen photography is another nod to John Carpenter. There are scenes where the girls are walking through their suburban neighborhood, and it feels almost like an outtake from Halloween.
The scene where they're at the beach, and, like, for me... Yeah, and I'm going to ask you guys if I'm just a stupid here, but the scene where they're at the beach and the girl's paddling in the, what is that, like a
canoe or
whatever she's in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is for some reason, I didn't actually put it together the first time I saw this, that was the same girl that they were, I don't know, I guess they were, I thought they were at, like, a public beach or something, because when the woman was coming up behind her, the one that pulls her hair, mm-hmm. I didn't put that together that was actually the ghost at first, or the it. And so when I was watching it, I was like, I thought that was her friend walking up on her from behind.
I think it is her friend. I think it's taking the form of her friend, isn't it?
Yeah, because Hugh or Jeff, as they later find out his name, basically says it can look like someone you know. And the first time I saw it, it was the same girl. It's like the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, that's just her friend. They're just trying to shock you. Then they show the girl on the boat. I'm like, uh-oh. So yeah, that's what they were going for, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Like I've seen this movie 3 times, and I'm like, every time I'm like, that looks just like her. The girl coming up behind her.
I have that problem a lot with the giallos, where all these women have the same sort of makeup and hair, and it's sort of sometimes they can get quite interchangeable.
Same thing with all the titties. Like, seriously.
Well, if you're focusing on the titties, then all the ladies are going to look the same. The other thing, I love the central concept behind It Follows, which reminds me a bit of something like The Ring, which is sort of this curse that's passed on, you know, this supernatural infection almost. I thought the lead actress was brilliant. Is it Micah Monroe is her name? She's great.
She was also in The Guest, wasn't she?
Yeah, and she's great in that movie as well. Uh-huh. Although, you know, the film does, I don't know, do you guys agree with this? I felt the film was kind of cold and detached because of that sort of quirky indie mumblecore atmosphere the director's going for. It felt kind of cold and detached. So although she's a likable enough character, I don't feel that invested in the movie as such.
I think it kind of lends itself to be that way because of its setting. It's set in Detroit, which is basically cold and detached from the rest of America. Because it's basically Detroit is like the worst city in America as far as crime goes. It's like extremely dangerous.
Are you just basing this on RoboCop?
No, seriously, it really is a fact. You can look this up. It's like the most dangerous city in America.
Okay. It just sounds funny when you say it out loud.
Yeah, and it also sounds kind of racist as well. Just to give a balanced opinion, I don't think Detroit is the worst city in the world. Okay?
Okay. Been there?
No.
What would you say is the worst city in the world, Eric?
It's a wonderful place to visit.
Yeah. What would you say is the worst city in the world, Eric?
Sorry?
What would you say is the worst city in the world?
The worst city in the world? Oh. Well, no, I can't. I'm not going to say anything because we'll probably have a listener there who'll cry and... It's probably Bristol.
Oh, Eric.
Ha ha. But only in the last few years, only since a certain someone moved there.
You got nothing going on, Justin.
14 years ago. Bristol's the most desirable place to live in Britain, I'll have you know.
What? Even above the Lake District?
Yeah, city wise, yeah.
All right, yeah. Mm. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I'm sure you read that in some imaginary magazine that you dreamt about the other night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Anyway. I think the nightmare logic of the film is both a plus and a minus. The downside being that the film really doesn't establish any solid rules as to what it can do as such. It's kind of implied at the start that it just has to catch up and touch you and sort of that's it, you're a goner. But I mean, it manages to sort of pull Jay's hair and it grabs her in the swimming pool in the climactic scene and she survives and escapes. And it's also, it isn't that clever. If it can assume any form and it's trying to catch somebody out, why does it always assume the form of something really obvious, like a naked woman or a naked man or an old lady in a hospital gown walking around the high school? I mean, that's obviously going to be, quote, it. If it just blended in a bit more, surely it would have a higher success rate at killing these people.
Two things, like if it assumed the position of a naked woman, it would obviously already get me. But
depends on the type of woman, surely.
I don't know. This one didn't have any rules, but
if it was Rosie O'Donnell, naked, surely you would be running away.
Yeah, I'm good. but one thing I was questioning in the entire movie is like the scene at the beach where they're in that like shed is. The thing, it looks like one thing when they go into the shed, but when they are in there and the thing breaks into, like, busts the hole in the bottom, it's completely different. Like,
yeah, it turns into a bloke then, yeah.
Well, like, so, like, why does it change so frequently?
Because it can.
No, but like, for me, like...
You like Madonna, she's always changing her clothes.
Like, I just would assume that if you were trying to actually kill somebody or do something that you wouldn't change so frequently, like within 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I suppose it's part of the nightmare logic of the film.
Maybe it changed into the little kid in that scene. So it'd be like smaller and could crawl through that hole that it kicked open.
Mm-hmm. Just like T-1000.
Like Mario Brothers.
Yeah. You got the magic mushroom or something.
You get shrunk.
Yeah, actually, It Follows is very Mario Brothers, now you mentioned it. Although Mario Brothers movie did have Bob Hoskins in it.
Yes.
Which makes it superior.
So, So you do think that movie's better than It Follows because it's got Bob Hoskins?
Yeah, it does, yeah. Okay. It is, yeah, superior. Well, it's superior to a lot of movies for that very reason. Anyway, Joseph, like you were saying, I like the fact that sort of the origins of It are never explained. And I think I was reading there's a proposed sequel coming up where they're going to possibly explore the origins of It, which mightn't be the best idea. Because I mentioned The Ring earlier, and that for me, the downfall with The Ring is that it's scary up until a point, and then they start going too much into who Sadako is and why she's crawling out of people's televisions and why this curse exists. And that's where it stops being scary for me.
And they do that with the Paranormal Activity movies as well.
Yeah.
The first couple were, you know, pretty scary in their own right. Then they try to explain what this entity in the house is, and I just kind of – it lost me. So
yeah.
Yeah, when you explain things like that, it makes it less scary. I mean, like, It Follows makes sense, but, like, because – you don't know, like, the scene where they're in the bedroom and the big guy comes through the door is terrifying, and I don't need to know why it's terrifying. It just
is a good scene. Yeah, that is a great scene where the big tall guy comes bolting through the door.
What would be funny is they found out, it's like, we found out its name is Bob, so the next would be like, Bob Follows.
Yeah.
The sequel, Bob Follows 3.
Bob isn't a great name for a horror movie villain. I don't know why, it just isn't. Justin wouldn't be either. Nobody's scared of a Justin. Hello?
Hello? I'm still here.
Hello?
Hello?
He just insulted you. You have nothing to say.
Where's everyone gone?
I think Eric can't hear us.
Can't you hear us,
Eric? Hey, I can hear you now.
Oh.
I said Toya follows.
Oh.
So I missed about 30 seconds there. You all went. Where did you go?
Well, no, we were talking about you. We put you
did you hear me going hello, hello, hello?
Yeah. Yeah, we put you on mute so we could all sort of bitch about you behind your back.
Can you do that?
Yeah. You have to listen back to hear what we said. We all started speaking Irish accents.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Top of the morning to you.
That's not an Irish accent.
Top of the morning to you. It is.
That doesn't even sound like a comedy Irish accent.
It is. Top of the morning to you.
Do people in Ireland say top of the morning?
No, nobody says top of the morning.
Now, wait a minute, Eric. I think in one of our earlier episodes you said Tora Laura, top of the morning to you.
Yeah, in a jokey way.
Okay.
It's like Justin doesn't always eat cucumber sandwiches and dance around a maypole. Well, he does sometimes, but not all the time.
No.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
But Joseph, anyway, Eric. Joseph, your accents are uncanny, aren't they?
I know. I should be in pictures.
Mm. So, anyway, Eric... Carry on.
Yeah, I think I'd finished. You can just mute me now for the rest of the show if you want.
Hello, hello.
Shags. I'm going to go try on some nice dresses and see which one fits for my party later tonight.
Okay. Watch out for the sleeves.
I will.
Anyway, Justin, you go ahead.
Right. Okay. Well, I do love It Follows. I watched it again, obviously, recently. I watched it with a commentary. I'm not sure if you've got the commentary. It's a kind of a UK commentary on the British release. So I don't know if you've got that in the States. I don't know what kind of commentary you've got, but it's not anyone associated with the film. It's two critics discussing it. It was quite interesting. But I remember seeing it at the cinema, and it was played at the Art House cinema here. But I know it did get a kind of major release. It's a bit like Eric was saying, The Witch and The Babadook. They kind of breakout hits, which don't really fit into the multiplex, but they do kind of go into that arena to some degree. And I thought I really liked the film. I think it's out of the three, it's a better film than Babadook or The Witch. I think it satisfies more as a horror movie more than either of those two, especially The Witch, which we discussed. It's not a horror movie at all, but it's a good movie, but it's not a horror movie. Whereas I think It Follows does satisfy as a horror movie, and it does have several moments of kind of bone chilling horror and surprise. And you've kind of mentioned obviously that scene where the big man walks into the bedroom, and some you know other things throughout it that's got some genuine shocks and chills in it, which is why I do think the person behind who made it did have a genuine interest. And certainly it's a kind of magpie nature. It kind of borrows from left, right and centre. It's obviously the main inspirations are kind of Halloween, but also the whole sequence of the borrowed from Nightmare on Elm Street, which is kind of the main character watching her boyfriend across the street being murdered, essentially, which is kind of lifted directly from A Nightmare on Elm Street. But of course, that's kind of perfect lift because it is that kind of nightmare logic. You know, this idea that all these kind of odd things are happening, I'm just kind of repeating what we've already said, but the kind of odd things that if it was somebody in real life was reading something on one of those kind of weird clamshell e-readers, you'd be like, what the hell is that? But they don't have that. And the other thing I liked, I actually quite like the fact that then they are kind of mumblecore teenagers in so much they don't act like slash movie teenagers do. They don't, you know, they're kind of maudlin, but they are incredibly narcissistic, which I think is a kind of a good comment on being a teenager, which is it's all about kind of egotistical. It's all about them themselves, and it can remind me in a kind of weird way that like the Peanuts cartoon, you know, when you hear the adults mumbling, but you don't see them, or you know. But it's a bit
with what a comparison. Wow.
But it's
been compared to Super Mario Brothers and yeah.
Well, you know. But the whole thing with
you know what's weird to me is oh sorry,
no go on.
Well, the
I'm getting echo, by the way.
I'm getting echo too now.
Major echo.
That's weird.
I can't hear echo. Well, carry,
it's
carry
not
on.
Recording, so it's okay.
It's not recording anyway. So.
But but the boyfriend seems very unaffected by, you know, they tell her they tell him what's going on. And when they're at the beach, not boyfriend, I mean, I guess it's the guy she just bangs randomly. But at the beach, he sees her picked up by her hair by nothing. And later he's still unaffected. He's like, no, I'm not worried about it. But so when he's like, when she goes to his house, when he's like, jumping through his own window and stuff, it's just weird to me that like he would never put up any kind of guard against what she's talking about, because especially from the beach scene.
I think, yeah, because he says something like it could be anything or something like that. Now when it
he's not
breaks
scared
it,
though, he's not scared at all, and it's like he lets the old big titty woman into his room.
Yeah, but he does. He didn't see her getting her hair picked up on the beach because he's having a piss. He's facing the trees when it happens.
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
so
you're right.
He doesn't see it. So all he sees is
he's
them running
going
away.
To the lavatory. Would you stop using such vulgar language, Justin?
Well, I had a question. When it breaks into his house, is that him? Is he breaking into his own house?
Is it taking his
form? Oh, okay, I didn't notice that.
That's why it's so confusing, because he like throws the block through his window and goes in. And it's weird because some things about this movie are very confusing.
I wonder like if it can like assume the form of anyone. If it assumed the form of the person it's going after, shouldn't it like also be able to like assume that it had keys to the door?
Well, that's the thing, is like if it assumes your own identity, like it should know what you like. So apparently if it comes after you and it looks like an old naked like 90-year-old woman, that's what you like. Because it knows it's getting into your mind.
Could be.
Interesting.
Gross.
God knows what we show up at Justin's door then.
Or yours.
No, it's going to be more about yours. Bob Hoskins running after Eric.
Yeah, but like you'd be running towards him, wouldn't you? You wouldn't be running away.
Hey, there you go.
I totally would.
Bob
Hoskins
follows.
I don't
care
if he bends my knees backwards. I would go first.
Oh, I
see, Eric, Bob Hoskins follows. There you go, right there.
Yep.
Oh, see, Bob is scary.
There's a nightmarish image for us all. So no, but what I was mentioning about the Peanuts thing, what I meant by that was like the adults in this, the mother, because there's no fathers in this at all, apart from the dead father who she sees at the swimming pool at the end, who kind of is attacking her. But the mother's a really ineffectual character, isn't she? And you barely, most of the time, you see her face is obscured, you don't really see her. And it's kind of interesting that in most films, like Nightmare on Elm Street, you've got Roddy Blakeley, you know, and her Oscar-worthy performance.
Oscar-worthy according to Nathan.
Yeah. comes to kind of the rescue or tries to take charge of things. But in this, the mother is they're completely ineffectual. They're just not involved. But again, it comes back to this like, kind of idea of the kind of singular, egotistical world of teenagers where everything's about them, so everything on the periphery is out of focus almost, which it kind of quite literally is in this. So that's what the kind of Peanuts comparisons, you know, the adults all kind of talking, you can't understand what they're saying because they're not, you know, they're not central to the action. So The other thing which I thought was kind of interesting, we were talking about, is it a slasher movie? And no, it's not a slasher movie, but of course it borrows enough from the slasher movie for it to be, you know, certainly warranted for us to cover it. But the other interesting thing, I think, is that unlike slasher movies, apart from the kill at the beginning of the woman, none of the central characters, the core group of friends, are killed, are they? Apart from, obviously, the boyfriend towards the end of the movie, or the one she's banging. But the core, in a normal, inverted commas, slasher movie, it would knock off her friends one by one, wouldn't it, after, as it's coming after her? But they kind of avoid that. But I think it still works. I personally think the ending in the swimming pool, I think, it kind of works, it doesn't work. I think they could have come up with a different way of finishing the movie, perhaps. It just feels a little bit out of place. But overall, I think it's a fantastic movie. The soundtrack is brilliant, you know, and it's really clever. And I think it plays on that dream nightmare logic, you know, absolutely brilliantly. And it's, you know, certainly one of my favourite films from the last couple of years, definitely. So it's always a pleasure to watch it. So, yeah, that's my tuppence.
The ending, especially, like for me, wow, Echo.
I know, the Echo is back.
Sorry. No, but the ending for me was very dreamlike, because it's like they're just going along with it. It's like the end where they're holding hands, just walking down the street. It's very much like Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, like you guys just talked about, and the fact that, like, you know, it's not normal, but they're still going along with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it feels like that. When I was watching it again last night, I drew a lot of allusions to, you know, the Nightmare on Elm Street series, especially the first two, you know, especially two, you know, considering Freddy and Freddy's Revenge shows up in the real world a lot. So I was like, this kind of reminds me a little bit of Freddy's Revenge in smaller manners, at least.
Well, in that opening scene where the girl is escaping from the house, and the house number was 1492 in It Follows, and I was like, oh, that's the same as in Nightmare on Elm Street, I thought to myself, but then I did some research and it's not. No, the first two digits are 14 something, but it wasn't the same, and I thought it was going to be an Elm Street in-joke, but no, I was wrong.
They lived they lived on Flem Street, Nightmare on Flem Street.
Oh, Flem Street.
The one thing about the beginning that makes me laugh every time, I've seen it like three times, every time is the girl running in her heels. Take the fucking heels off. Like, really? Like, she's running down the street in pumps.
at least she didn't trip over something.
Yeah, you're right. She's good at it. Yeah, she's very good at running in those pumps. But for me, it's like, if you're running from something, just ditch them. It takes 5 seconds to just pull those off.
I don't know. Which is worse, running in heels or running in your bare feet on concrete? Must be kind of sore.
I don't know. If I'm running from death, I'm going to take bare feet.
Justin, do you find it difficult to run in heels?
I've never tried, Derek. How about you?
Oh, have you not? I'm not the one who dresses up as a woman and has mad transsexual parties every Friday night.
Well, neither am I.
Every Friday.
Are you not?
Friday. Oh, sorry. Every other Friday.
All right.
Randall, your opinion.
Randall?
I think we lost Randall.
No, you didn't lose, but my name's not Randall.
Yes, it is.
What?
Your name is Randall.
Why is his name Randall?
Because that is his name.
It's my middle name, but I don't go by it.
Start calling you Randall. Nathan, go ahead.
Sorry.
That's what you thought.
That's what he thought.
That's what I thought. That's my opinion.
Are you smoking something?
No, I can't. Not with these allergies.
Okay.
I felt bad for the girl at the beginning, because I think her death looked like it was very painful. I mean, she was like bent up into like a pretzel.
Okay, like, sorry to interrupt you, but, like, okay, so that death at the beginning, like, bent her leg upwards, but when it broke into the bedroom of the guy she was having sex with, it just humped him to death. Like, I'm confused, like, the logic between, like, how does it tear you up?
I'm wondering if he was having a decent death. Yeah,
If it fits
on your predilection, because she liked to run, obviously, and he liked to have sex, obviously. So there you go.
I took it as, why does Jason kill one person with a machete and another person with a knife and one with a meat cleaver? I mean, it's just like, oh, I'm just going to kill you this way. You know, I mean, think of how many people it's probably killed. I mean, it probably just wants to try variety, you know, see what it enjoys.
Most people would rather be killed by sex than by having their leg fucked up.
Well, she probably resisted.
Oh.
Well, it probably did sort of fuck him up after that, didn't it? Because we didn't see
riding pretty good.
That was just the hors d'oeuvre. Yeah.
I'm wondering, wasn't the leg breaking scene, wasn't it like the only real scene of like gore in the film? I mean, I don't recall much blood, if at all, throughout the rest.
No,
of the
just gunshots. That's really all.
Yeah, the big blood pool at the blossom of at the end of the movie.
Mm.
Sorry, Nathan.
Anyway,
sorry, Randall.
Okay, I liked the ending because I felt like it was perfect for it. It was a perfect fit for that movie. I mean, it's never going to be over. The nightmare basically is never going to be over. So, I mean, how exactly would you end that except just have them always watching their backs, I guess? I mean, I think that was a good ending for the film. Like Justin said, the soundtrack is amazing. I mean, everything else that I was going to say is, you know, you guys pretty much covered it. I think we pretty much are in agreement on the film. I mean, I really, really, really enjoyed it.
Now, one thing, have any of you seen Soul Survivor from 1982?
Yeah.
This movie reminds me a lot of Soul Survivor.
Final
Destination?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like It Follows in Final Destination. Soul Survivor is like Final Destination, and It Follows rolled up into one, but obviously it predates both. Carnival of Souls does that as well.
Soul Survivor, the director actually sued Final Destination, like the director of the first one.
Yeah, I think he tried. I don't know if he was successful or not.
No, he wasn't successful at all.
Of course, Nathan said Carnival Souls did as well, but I think Soul Survivor definitely has more of the It Follows kind of dreamlike, otherworldly feel, in my opinion.
I'm just thinking it's ironic that the director of Soul Survivor would sue Final Destination when his movie, I mean, it does, you know, borrow from Carnival of Souls. I mean, the basic plot line, you know, is very similar.
I guess Carnival of Souls is public domain, so they didn't really think about the ramifications.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It is public domain.
So he's probably like, man, they fucking stole my stolen idea.
He stole my stolen idea.
So do we want to – is there anything else left to say on the film, or do you want to move on to a little bit of background?
Sure.
Yeah, shall we move on to some background? Who would like to go first?
Eric. I know you have a lot this week.
You know I have no background because I'm still suffering from my Friday the 13th marathon jet lag.
So is that your background?
So what have you got then for us, Eric?
It was filmed in Detroit in 2013.
Okay, well, thank
you. And it was released in Ireland and the UK before the US by about 2 weeks.
Mm, yeah.
That's true.
I have a feeling if you filmed a movie in Detroit, it would be much more horrifying than anything you could fictionally come up with.
Yeah, definitely.
This is real Detroit bashing. That's all our Detroit listeners, if we
it's
have
any. It's
pretty
bad. God. It's pretty terrible.
I don't know, with all the shootings Chattanooga's had lately,
is that not where
we're inching up on them.
Is Sam Raimi not from Detroit?
Yes. Well,
is he?
They're like in a suburb outside of Detroit.
I was going to say he's from Michigan, but I don't think he's from like Detroit, like D-City.
Yeah. So, Nathan, any background?
It Follows is based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
In the real story, the girl, you know, like she had, you know, intercourse. And as we know from Carrie, the first sin was intercourse. So it also had a lot of religious connotations to it. And it followed her. And I think that she died eventually. So, you know.
Are you talking about the Bible?
I think he is.
It sounds very
Are you trying to get me to love Jesus?
No. I just made all that background up just so it seemed like I had something.
Oh, Nathan.
It's not based on a true story.
What? It followed and it killed.
That's all the power of the movie gone for me, man.
It followed and it killed a bunch of people that had sex, and then it ran for president of the U.S. and it's still
won.
Yeah,
I'd vote for it over Donald Trump any day.
follows.
Johnny, any background info?
I have none. You did mention the main actress in this, and I thought it was funny because I've seen her in a lot of indie stuff, but apparently she's the lead actress in the new Independence Day movie.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. She took over Mae Whitman's character, who was the president's daughter in the original. Yeah.
Oh.
So I thought it was really funny because
from small
I don't see her as kind of a Hollywood actress. She's very indie.
Yeah.
I mean, take that as you will. I mean, it sounds very assholeish to say out loud, but she seems like an actress that should be in smaller stuff.
It's kind of funny, isn't it, when people do that? Because, like, Sarah Polley did it in the Dawn of the Dead remake, didn't she? And she was but I kind of guess it's a lot of they kind of take these big roles because they get paid huge amounts of money and they can just do smaller roles and, you know, work on their inverted commas art. But then she did say she did this in The Guest, so she obviously has that kind of that sensibility, doesn't she? She's obviously kind of quite keen on genre-related stuff. So, yeah, that's it. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, she was born in 1993.
Oh shit. She's
so old.
She's young. Well, you know what's funny is her and her sister were the youngest actors in the movie. Everybody else was actually in their mid-20s, which I thought was funny because they were, like her, I thought her character was supposed to be the oldest one.
Yeah.
She was one of the youngest ones actually on film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Justin, any background?
Well, not a huge amount, no. I mean, I've got it was just to say that, unsurprisingly, the film was inspired by the director's own kind of nightmares, which, you know, you take from it. So David Robert Mitchell just sort of said it was kind of based on a recurring anxiety dream that he had. Which I thought was quite sort of, it's kind of fairly obvious, isn't it? I mean, that was it just confirms that was... interesting thing, but also there was an interview with the person who did the music, Disaster Piece, on the UK Blu-ray release, and he said that he wasn't a fan of horror movies. In fact, he avoided horror movies when he was a kid. But he did video games mostly. He scored video games, but considering he's not somebody that's an aficionado of horror movies, then his kind of pastiche of like the Carpenter soundtrack in '80s. Kind of soundtracks is very, very good, isn't it? And I think it's the film would suffer without it. So.
Hey, Justin, I was going to ask you a question. Mm. Actually, when she's in her college class and she sees the woman coming at her from the window and she gets up and starts running away, was that Toya? Or
I think it was Toya without makeup on.
Shut. Oh, you all go away, you horrible people.
Hold on, let me just put Eric on mute.
No, don't put me on mute again. Did you seriously put me on mute earlier?
Can anyone
hear? Can't do that. You can't do that, Eric.
Where's Eric gone? Oh, hold on.
Shut up. I can hear you.
Actually, he probably can because he's got the recording software. He can mute you.
I can do anything. It's like controlling the world. I can make Eric sound I can make you sound like a girl or tickle.
I would never sound like a girl.
Well,
because I'm too masculine.
Inga.
Shut up. Well, I think we all know what happened last time. Yeah.
Eric, she looked good for her age. I mean, she didn't look bad for her age.
Susie is older than Toya.
Yeah, she's worn a bit better, though, isn't she?
No. No. Susie's always looked like a big slapped arse with her stupid makeup and her stupid hair.
Slapped arse.
Eric.
I love it. Anyway, Justin, anything else?
Not really, no. I mean, obviously, that you could read a load into it about it, sexually transmitted diseases, which, of course, would be a fear of people getting into sex for the first time, I kind of guess. Also, one of the things that the commentary they were talking about, which I thought was quite interesting, was sort of saying that how people always think with these kind of movies that kids, teenagers want to be adults. But in fact, this film felt like they were actually hankering back to a more innocent age when they were younger kids, because all the things were like they're playing old maid, weren't they, and kind of childlike things, which I thought was quite interesting. But the whole thing is kind of maybe the idea of actually having older actors and actresses playing the friends was again just another something that the director did to try and put everything slightly off balance.
It's kind of interesting that you mentioned that, because aside from the one girl with that weird e-reader thing, no one's like playing around on their cell phones, and it is weird that they do play those old games and sitting out on the porch at night during the fall, like, you know, kids from the 70s and 80s would do. So yeah,
it's when they're inside, they're watching like black and white movies and stuff. Like, yeah, it's very old school, and not on like flat screens. They're on old tube TVs.
Mm. Yeah, it's really, really interesting.
Well, they said the only time you see a mobile phone in the whole film is the first when the girl on the beach is calling.
Yeah,
you don't see a mobile phone at all. Yeah, you don't see a mobile phone at all in the rest of the film, which is, if it was, you know, you just wouldn't get, kids, teenagers without mobile phones if it was a real thing. So, again, it's that kind of dream logic, isn't it, where you accept whatever's going on in the dream. It's very rare for you to have a moment of lucidity and actually question what's going on in a dream. Everything, no matter how weird, you just take as read, don't you, in dreams?
Yeah, earlier we were talking about, you know, the supposed sequel, and they were talking about how they're going to delve into the origins of It. You know, if they're going to make a sequel, instead of doing that, you know, I think what they should do instead, you know, just leave It as kind of like this infinite regress creature, and just actually maybe just kind of up the body count a little bit. That's where I would take it. Yeah.
Well, if they explain it, it's just going to take away. Yeah. Like, I don't want to know what it is or any of that. Like, that for me, like, just takes away from the lore. Like, from, I don't know. Like, it just takes away the scariness.
Yeah, definitely. So, Justin.
That's the complaint a lot of people had about Halloween 2, is that they went trying to explain Michael Myers too much. But I didn't have an issue with
that. That wig was scary.
Well, the wig was scary. Yeah, it did make her look a bit like a bag lady, but
I didn't know it was a wig for the longest time.
Yeah, well, neither did I, but I blame that on VHS and its lack of definition on the image.
Yeah, when you watch it on Blu-ray, it's so obvious. Mm. Anyway, Justin, anything else?
No, that's all from me.
Okay, I got quite a bit here, actually. The budget was $2 million. They originally were going to dump this to on-demand platforms, but they took a gamble and did a cinema-only release, and it paid off. It grossed $14.6 million, so, you know, definitely made its budget back. I guess that would justify a sequel.
What did they spend $2 million on? Like, holy crap. Like,
probably a lot of
no effects, really.
Well, it looks good. I mean, it obviously put a lot of care into the look of the movie and the
probably locations and
like the actual, like the, like what they filmed it with.
Yeah. A lot of the film probably as well.
And the theater, proper actors as well. Don't forget.
That's true. The theater featured at the beginning of the film is the Redford Theater. It's a historic Japanese style theater with a fully functioning Wurlitzer organ in the old Redford neighborhood of Detroit.
I have a fully functioning organ as well in my pants.
Yeah. Oh, Eric.
And the Evil Dead actually premiered at that theater that they go see the movie at.
The Evil Dead actually premiered in my pants.
Did it?
Yeah. Eric, are you on something?
What? Is this the joke of the week? Or
I think Eric is the joke of the week.
I think I am the joke of the week. I'm always the joke of the week in this podcast.
Anyway, as we were talking about, the time frame of the movie is intentionally kept ambiguous so that it resembles a dream. Some of the cars shown are from more recent times. Many appear to be from the 60s to late 80s. Early CRT television sets are shown whenever the character is watching movies. Conflicting technology include Yara on a device that looks like a shell compact, but she reads from it like an e-book reader, and using it as a light source at one point. Also, the girl from the beginning of the film uses a cell phone, blah, blah, blah. We talked about that. And drives a modern automobile. Several modern vehicles in view. Let's see what else. The poem that Jay's English teacher reads out loud is T.S. Eliot's The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. Apparently, and I don't know, I've never read the poem, but apparently it shares some commonalities with the film.
You know who probably does know the poem? It's Justin, the one who likes to watch Cocteau movies all the time.
Could be.
The guy that gave her the gift or whatever you want to call it, was he camping out in the Myers house? Like, that house looked very much like the Michael Myers house from part one or part two.
Probably was.
The attic looked like the attic from Hellraiser.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Jay is short for Jamie, a tribute to Scream Queen Jamie Lee Curtis. In the film, Jay has a sister named Kelly. Jamie Lee Curtis also has a sister named Kelly. Kelly That's Curtis. Weird.
Yeah, she was in The Sect.
Yeah.
Was she really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Lead actress. I think that was probably one of her few roles, yeah.
More off from that, the film takes inspiration from several horror films and their tropes from the 60s to the 80s, especially from the slasher classic Halloween. The girl in the opening scene of the film is named Annie, and one of Laurie's friends in Halloween was named Annie Brackett, as we all know. Let's see. The film alludes to teenage problems through its props. This is seen when Jay is lining up blades of grass on her upper leg, which I think is supposed to represent cutting and suicide, as well as Jay's trail of blood in her or Jay's tray of food. I'm sorry, in her room.
That's yeah, I had to get food and blood mixed up.
That's a Freudian slip. Wow. As well as Jay's tray of food in her room that first has a pill laid out on a napkin, and later is the only thing touched from the tray that's supposed to represent drug dependency. Jay and Kelly's mother's faces. Mother's face is never clearly shown. We talked about that in the first scene in which she appears in the film. She is seen talking on the phone in the kitchen with her face completely covered by her hair. In every other scene, her face is either out of focus or partially cut by the frame. Following overwhelmingly positive first weekend reception from critics and audiences, the film's originally planned VOD theatrical release was canceled in favor of theatrical only, and I touched on that already. The entire score by Rich Vreeland, also known as Disaster Piece, was completed in less than 3 weeks, and he makes a cameo appearance in the film as the announcer at the school where they go looking for Hugh, or Jeff, as he's later to be known. David Robert Mitchell, the director, said in an interview that the monster could potentially board a plane in order to follow the cursed person, which is a proposed sequel idea. That might be kind of interesting, actually.
It's like snakes on a plane. It's on
a plane. Yeah,
it's on a plane. Yeah. Let's see. I think Justin might have mentioned this. Disaster Piece recorded the score for the film because the director, David Robert Mitchell, was a huge fan of the video game Fez, which Disaster Piece did the music for. David Robert Mitchell, the director again, has cited the works of George A. Romero and John Carpenter as major influences on his style and filming and creative decisions on It Follows. It was shot mainly on a wide-angle lens, or is it 2.35:1 aspect ratio, to give the film the more expansive, intimidating feel. David Robert Mitchell, I'm just going to start calling him DRM. he started writing the screenplay in 2011. The film's concept derives from The Recurring Nightmare, which Justin's talked about. Mike Lanier, who plays the very tall It, is a 7'7" Detroit resident who designs engines for General Motors and is one half of the world's tallest twins. So, interesting. let's see. The colors of red and pink are used to foreshadow the upcoming appearance of It, as they appear either in the background or on a character's piece of clothing whenever it attacks. And I think I noticed that now that I'm reading that. The director said that neither a condom nor same-gender sex would stop the monster and the curse would still be passed. And hey, I was asking about condoms earlier, so there you go. Or lubricated rubbers.
These ain't lubricated rubbers.
Also, this movie, I don't know if you guys know this, one fact I had is actually it was sponsored by Valtrex. They produced it. Valtrex?
What's Valtrex? Sorry, you'll have to explain.
It's a condom.
Oh,
no, Valtrex is herpy medicine.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah, hey, there's some good advertising.
I don't know anything about STDs, so.
I think he's trying to say that Johnny does, probably.
Yeah. Those are the commercials where everybody's kayaking and rock climbing and stuff. But they're able to because they take Valtrex.
Oh, okay. So they're not itchy when they're out in the elements.
Well, you could scratch your bits against the rocks as you're climbing them, I suppose.
Just drag it.
Is that from personal experience, Eric?
Yeah, after my night of passion with you, Justin.
I know you wanted it. I know you wanted it, but
I still think you got a hotel room later that night.
In your dreams. I know you have my
nightmares.
It is a dream. It is a dream, big boy. It is. let's see. A ball seems to follow the curse throughout the entire movie, and soon after Jay gets infected, a ball hits her window and lands in her garden. When they go to Hugh's house, they find a picture of him holding a ball. After Jay has slept with Greg, a ball is seen bouncing from the direction of Jay's house toward Greg's house. Finally, when Jay sees Greg dying, the motif on her T-shirt, a blonde girl in a ball, is seen clearly. The ball is covered by her hair up until the very moment he dies. She's still wearing the T-shirt later when Paul tries to kiss her, implying that she did not go through with her plan to pass it on to the guys on the boat. And I think the film implies that anyway. But the it's seen by Jay are all either wearing white or are nude. And that's all the background I have.
You know what's weird to me is has really no big part of the movie, but that kid who's like kind of peeping in on her at the beginning, was kind of a throwaway scene. Like, why was that there?
Yeah, there's like two kids come up behind a bush and they're like watching her swim, and then it's never referenced again. It's just kind of like a throwaway shot.
That's the kid that showed up later.
Yeah, across from the door. The broken door. Yeah.
And he also he's also on the bike as well later on. He stops and watches them.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I must have missed that.
Yeah. I gotta pay attention.
All kids look the same.
Eric.
That's all the background I have.
Yeah, I was going to say, Eric, just because I know you were desperate to find out, it's the poem that when Jay's in English class is T.S. Eliot's The Love Song of Alfred.
Yeah, sorry, Joseph's Alfred already mentioned
Prufrock. Well, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we mentioned that if anyone knows that poem, it's probably you, because you'd like to watch.
Oh, he probably didn't hear you because you were on mute.
Yeah, probably. You don't like this mute facility.
It's great for us, though. Right.
I'm sorry. I'm finally waking up, so like now I'm more like energetic.
Well, it's time for feedback, isn't it? Shall we come back after with this little message from, well, Joseph, about how to get in contact with the show. So be back in a second.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at @THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Okay, yeah, do get in contact with the show. And just like, Hitchcock once said, the best thing to do is to show, if you want to create suspense, is to show say there's a bomb under a table, but you don't know when it's going to go off. So to create suspense, Nathan's phone has only got 10% left on it, so he could be gone at any moment. So we've got to get a move on. So, background. Feedback. Do we have any? We've got the Facebook.
Just the Facebook feedback, I think.
Would you like to regale us?
Sure. This is from Amanda Reyes. She says, not sure if there's still time to leave feedback, but here are some random It Follows thoughts. First of all, I loved it. I thought It Follows was really creepy and atmospheric. The soundtrack is terrifying, too. Probably one of my favorite horror films from recent history. One thing that really struck me was all the metaphors, and not necessarily the STD hook, as it were. All of those shots of nature amongst human-made decay was really fascinating. It was like the natural world against the unnatural world, and the supernatural world really blended well. Also, I liked the idea of how the kids took the evil, in quotations, out of the suburbs and into the city as a way to maintain the diminishing middle-class world they lived in. Also noted with the encroaching decay, It Follows is also commenting on the absence of adult identity, seen with the mom never really being seen on screen full face, and also the fact that most of the authority figures simply don't exist. I guess it's about being lost. I don't think it's a perfect film, but it's certainly one of the most thoughtful films I've seen in a long time. Definitely a keeper. Looking forward to your next show, guys. That's from Amanda Reyes. Let's see. Tom Virtuoso says, there are so many points of discussion that deviate from the basic storyline. We actually get a memorable score and interesting atmosphere that pits the time period in an alternate universe that feels like it's the 80s, even though there's weirdly discrete modern technology and characters that seem fairly genuine compared to the usual crop of Hollywood pretties. It's a solid effort. I love the slow burn horror. Despite mildly growing tired of the up-down, restart suspense. But it's still one of the few recent titles that I'm eager to talk about.
Can I mention something that's really embarrassing about this movie that that happens to me? I saw it three times, which I'm sure I mentioned probably 100 times already. But the scene where she's in the pool and the guy's throwing shit at her, I'm so embarrassed to say this out loud, but there's a part where he throws something and it hits her. I think it's like a toaster, and he hits her in the head. And every time I've seen this movie, I've jumped back at that fucking part. it's coming at me.
I wouldn't be embarrassed about that. I thought you were going to make like a really crude joke about like the pool filling up with blood and.
Oh no.
an obvious crude.
It's just wimp. I'm not that kind of person, though. Like, I usually can separate movies from reality, and I don't jump like that. But for some reason, every time that I think it's a toaster. It comes in her head every time I go back in my seat.
It would look amazing in 3D if it was in 3D, but it does make you flinch. Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
it's trying to kill me, and the toaster's been laughing at me. Anyway, Stephen Pytak says, It Follows is something special. It does a nice job of paying homage to classic slasher films like Halloween and A Nightmare on Elm Street. But it's also powerful enough to be considered a classic in its own right. And one reason why is the antagonist, a thing from another world which targets sexually active folks in a most unique way. It's creepy and pretty creative, and it gives us something new to think about when considering how sex usually equals death in these kinds of films.
Does it target sexually active people? I mean, that's the thing. I know it comes after them after the fact, but like, where did it start?
That's like that infinite.
Some guy jacking off in the woods.
Yeah, that's what started it. Yeah. Let's see. On top of that, It Follows has some really good scares, and I thought the score was awesome. I've heard some folks complain about the third act and the offbeat plan our heroes have to try to dispatch this thing. But I saw that as a last-ditch effort, something concocted out of desperation. So it didn't bother me so much. I think this is a classic of the slasher genre. I'd also like to mention that It reminded me at times of the villain from Uli Lamel's The Boogeyman, an invisible stranger who wasn't noticed until it was too late.
I never thought of that, but that's really good, yeah.
Yeah. I can see that, actually. Bob Hartshorn says, this movie is amazing. It plays like a slasher without actually being one. All the traits are there. Group of teenagers, unstoppable killer, etc. Yet it never resorts to cliche, and you don't feel cheated by the low body count either. The characters are really likable, and I adore the fact that the lead protagonist's friends get right behind her plight from the off instead of the usual, we don't believe you, man up, bitch, tedium. The aesthetic is very Elm Street-like, a swirly, watery, nightmarish dreamscape with a truly scary, unknowable monster at the center. I really dig the No Man's Land time zone, too. Palm-sized iPads, black-and-white Z-grade sci-fi looped on TV, the almost complete absence of significant adult characters. The list goes on. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention, it's really, really, really bloody terrifying. Love this film, and it's right up there with those other terrific modern grungy horrors, Absentia and Starry Eyes. Oh, I love both of those. I'm a follower. P.S. Thumbs up for Disaster Piece's music score, too.
I don't think they get on board with her right away, though, right? Like, it seems like they don't think she... Like, at first, it seems like they're kind of, like, thinking she's crazy.
At least Greg is kind of like that. I think, like, her sister and that sandwich-eating girl at least kind of clamor on to her.
Because it doesn't seem like at first, like when she's like seeing the people over the place, like it doesn't seem like they really, I don't know, have her back as much as you would expect.
Yeah.
The one dude does because he just wants to plow it. Like.
Yeah, he's one of those obvious like lovesick puppies.
Yeah, he just wants it to follow him.
Yeah, he don't care. But let's see, John Matthew says, I was pleasantly surprised by this one. Last year, I recall going after work with a bunch of friends to see this. I have extremely low expectations for modern horror, but this one blew me away. I never felt bored by it. It was witty and original. The 80-cent score, otherworldly atmosphere in there, and the creepiness of the Follows legend had me leaving the cinema in complete joy. It only showed in an art house cinema here in Sydney, Australia. Just curious, did it get a wider release for you guys in UK, USA, Ireland? Cheers. And I think
it did, because I saw it in multiplex.
Yeah, it is here as well. Yeah. Miles Hamer says, an original concept, yet respectful of its forefathers, a truly mesmeric camera style bathed in a beautiful sunburnt glow. Excellently realized tributary Carpenter score, well-drawn, believable, and crucially likable characters, and a sense of pervasive menace throughout. Truly a film I'd like to stick my dick into.
Oh my God.
which probably means I've missed the point somewhat. An easy 9 out of 10. Let's see. Our good friend Gregory Burkhart says, excellent choice. It Follows might not strictly meet all the genre's criteria, but it's got the heart and soul of a classic slasher. Robert Trippett says, this thing lives and dies by its soundtrack. Take that away and it's just a bunch of hipster teens mumbling at each other and refusing to emote. Scenes just kind of stop as if they didn't know what to have happen next and just set to hell with it. Tall, old, naked people walking toward this camera can be a little creepy, I guess. But okay, what else? It would have been better suited as some indie band's music video because it doesn't have the juice to tell a story.
What?
Say what?
I don't know, man. Like, to me, like, you put me in a wheelchair and wheel me around in an abandoned warehouse and have old naked women running at me, that's a fucking amusement park ride. Like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Well, even if you're in a bra and panties in the wheelchair.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think this movie, the soundtrack's amazing, but I do think that it stands on its own regardless.
Yeah, someone did a swap of the Halloween score and the It Follows score on both movies, and it still worked even with the Halloween score. So,
oh, but that's awesome.
Yeah. Soren Feltfoss Thompson says, didn't quite live up to the hype, but I still really like it. The basic concept is more or less borrowed from The Ring, and it doesn't really have a plot, but it does deliver a string of excellent set pieces that managed to make me jump more than once when I saw it at the cinema. To be honest, while I could appreciate the soundtrack on a purely musical level, I did find it sometimes distracted from what was going on screen. That was from Soren.
I didn't realize the main actor, not the main actor, but the guy who was like, the whole movie's like, please give it to me. like the little guy.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize he was English.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't really talk much in the film, so I guess.
Well, it's hard. But it's so weird to me because, like, he seems like a little dopey, like, American dude. And, like, when I found out he was from England, I was like, wow, that's weird.
Yeah, because we know all guys from England are big, brutish, muscular guys. And stuff.
Apparently.
All right, Justin.
That is right, yes.
Okay. Well, Scott Pliskin says, really good atmospheric horror movie, but not a slasher. More like a supernatural STD ghost movie. Plus, you've already discussed the movie in a recently seen segment. I remember Eric was obsessed with the girl who wears the big glasses and uses the clamshell e-reader. Were you obsessed with the girl with the big glasses, Eric?
She's hot. I think you just said you
didn't like her.
I find her slappable. Yeah, I don't know if I find her as slappable when I saw it first, but I do now. Yeah.
I think she's too
mumblecore for my liking.
Oh, I see what's going on here. He goes on to say, I think he said he'd choose her over Bob Hoskins. He's being facetious.
Yes. I wouldn't choose anyone over Bob Hoskins.
Eric could slap her into my arms.
Yeah, I'll slap her into your arms, Johnny. Yeah. I'll keep slapping her until she reaches. I can't remember where you live.
Texas. Even bloated, rotten corpse Bob Hoskins.
Yep.
Oh,
Eric.
That's pretty bad. Yeah.
My love is that pure.
Wow. Von Colmier says, what's next, The Parent Trap? But seriously, it has some elements of a slasher film, but I wouldn't consider it a slasher film. It's more of a monster movie than anything else. Also, I hope Eric gets that STD cleared up. They make a cream for most of them nowadays.
They do.
Von.
Jack Castillo says, one of the best horror films in recent years. Is it a slasher? Maybe, maybe not. Either way, I enjoy hearing you guys discuss films, so keep up the good work. Stuart Smith says, the first time I watched it, I thought it was respectable enough, but I found myself still thinking a few days later. Now, after rewatching it, I think it was one of the best horror films of last year. Jake the Snake McCoy says,
He's a friend of mine. I'm sorry.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah.
Very controversial. I think Terminator is more of a slasher film than that. But controversy aside, this is one of my favorite movies of last year. Proof you can still make a great horror movie with more of a feeling of dread other than countless jump scares. Really made me feel paranoid leaving the theater. Something a horror movie hasn't done in a while. And hands down, best horror score of the decade. One of those pesky Alishan brothers, R. Alishan, says, I personally prefer Micah Monroe's previous entry, The Guest, to this depressing art house flick. But based on these comments, I can see I'm on my own. And finally, Sean Kelly says, slasher film?
Well, okay, which movie was she more helpless in? I think she was more helpless in this than The Guest.
Yeah, because she seemed to come into her own towards the end of The Guest.
Yeah.
Oh, Eric.
I don't know what's going on, but Eric has been extremely immature this episode, hasn't he?
And what? That's saying something, isn't it? That's quite difficult.
Well,
for
it
Eric
helps
too.
Because, like I said, like I just woke up, so I'm kind of giddy. So everything Eric says makes me giggle like a dumbass.
I have no excuses, so yeah. I'm still suffering from my jet lag, maybe.
I just keep picturing.
Eric, you're so reserved and well mannered.
I know.
But talking of nightmarish imagery, I can't help but get the image of Eric ploughing the corpse, bloated corpse of Bob Hoskins out of my head now.
One thing like we didn't talk about that I wanted to actually ask you guys was the ending. And I don't know, like for me, with them holding hands, walking down the sidewalk, I don't know if the guy behind him is the next it or not, but like, what do you guys make of that? Because for me,
I think that was the point.
Well, for me though, that was like, I feel like they've accepted their destiny. they know it's going to happen and that's it. But like, what do you guys, I mean,
I think it's a matter of, they know they're always going to have to watch each other's back. And that's kind of what it's going to be. I mean, it's like either they're going to live their life like when she was barricading herself in her room, or they can just live their lives and just kind of watch each other's back and do their best. I think they just kind of are trying to make the best of a bad situation.
Does true love defeat it? I mean, like their love, like that, like for me, like, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm kind of a sap that way, but like, I was thinking, like, what if it wouldn't follow if they actually fell in love, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing I was looking at. It's like, maybe this movie's sort of a love story. Like, they go through all this dirty, kind of derelict building sex and sex on boats and sex down the beach. And when they actually fall in love, maybe it just kind of stays back in the background, because it here is way off in the background. So maybe it's like watching to see if they fall out of love.
I don't think that's the case, because the one guy, his girlfriend, she died, and he obviously really cared about her.
Which guy?
The guy that gave it to Jay.
Oh, yeah. Did he care about her? I mean,
I think he did. I mean, we didn't get a lot of that story.
I didn't feel he did care about her. I think he just wanted in her pants again. So,
yeah, he seemed like he was. I mean, that car he was driving around, like a car from the 70s that looked like it was brand new. So it seems like he'd put more effort into the car than her.
Yeah,
that sounds like most guys. Yeah.
But I mean, we don't get any indication he didn't care about his previous girlfriend that died. I think that he did care about her. I think that it doesn't matter. I mean, because think about it, even in any horror movie, in many horror movies, sex equals death. It didn't matter if you love each other or not.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it just, the end, I really like that. Them walking down the sidewalk, holding hands. And like, he's holding her cast. Like, to me, that, like, it felt more genuine than most. I don't want to say most horror movies, but most like slasher movies. So there was a part of me that was like, well, maybe now it'll leave them alone because they love each other.
Apparently that ending ticked off a lot of the more casual viewers.
Oh yeah. I won't even show it to Wes, cause he'll hate that ending so much.
Oh, he hasn't seen the movie. He hasn't seen the movie.
No, he hasn't seen it.
Wow. Wake him up now. Show it to him.
He will. Get
your charger. Get your charger.
Wes is the type, he wants stuff explained, and he doesn't like ambiguity in movies.
Oh, don't show him Strange Color of Your Body's Tears, then.
And he doesn't like open endings, either. He wants a final, like a finality of it.
Well, there you go.
Well, cool. I know I'm mindful of Nathan's phone running out, and as Nathan is choosing next week or next time's thing, I should probably mention what we're going to be covering next time, just in case we lose Nathan.
Yes.
We are going to be covering Hard to Die, starring the infamous Orville Ketchum.
That's going to be entertaining. So a very different movie from It Follows.
Well, I mean, it's got girls running in high heels.
That is true, but possibly not quite as unnerving or dreamlike.
No.
I think it's really scary.
From the screenshots I've seen of Hard to Die, it looks like one of Joseph's dreams.
I don't know. I thought you had a thing for Orville Ketchum, Eric.
I don't, no.
I've never even heard of Hard to Die.
Have you not? Oh, that'd be right. It'd be right up your street.
Yeah, it's a Slumber Party Massacre type movie set in a high rise. Oh. It's like Slumber Party Massacre meets Die Hard.
Oh my God, I need to see that so bad.
Or we is have
a sorority house, but it's a Nathan pick. So is it like? Yeah. Is it pretty bad? Or?
No, it's actually. Well, I'm not gonna say too much, but it's from what I remember, it's quite entertaining in its own right.
Yeah. And Nathan has departed us.
I know.
Like, he's gone. He's gone. His phone has died.
Oh, yeah. He died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because he got his last word in there. Yeah.
He was. So goodbye to Nathan, but we'll see him next time. But, Johnny, thank you ever so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. I'm really sorry that I was late.
That's okay. Where can people find you?
I am Johnny Krug at gmail.com. Yeah. On Twitter and Facebook, I'm Johnny Krug. I am actually starting Kruger Nation back up. And in fact, the new episode is going to be a Giallo episode talking about The Washing Machine and Midnight Killer, a.k.a. Okay. Midnight Ripper, a.k.a. You Will Die at Midnight, a.k.a. Midnight Horror, a.k.a. The Land Before Time.
Lots of a.k.a.s.
It's so many fucking names. But seriously, I'm going to be doing that episode. I've actually recorded a lot of it already. It's been a matter of getting it edited and put out. But so it's coming back.
Strong. Excellent. Well, that's sweet. Brilliant. Well, look that up, because it's a great podcast. And it's been fantastic having you with us, even if we missed you at the beginning. But you made up for it in the end. So... but Eric, talking about making things up in the end, I can't remember what I was going to say now.
Yeah, something rude about me, no doubt.
Hold on, where's the mute button? Anyway, now Eric's gone. No, but
I'm still here.
I know. Well, I haven't put you on mute at all. You listened back. There was no muting. I think it must be.
Wasn't
it not?
Because you disappeared. And, well, I don't know if you did. I couldn't hear you, and I was going hello, hello, hello.
And we were talking over you. Yeah. But listen back. Well, anyway,
it's me you're looking for.
Fascinating for our listeners. But thank you for listening to The Hysteria Continues. And we will catch you next time when we're going to be in a skyscraper with models in high heels and a killer in Hard to Die. So what are we playing out with, Joseph? I imagine I know.
This is Fear Factory doing a cover of U2's I Will Follow.
Okay. Right. Okay. Yeah. Right, well, here we go. So, say goodbye to the good people.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Say goodbye for Nathan in a Nathan-style voice, Joseph.
Bye, y'all. I'm going to go wake Wes up and get my charger.
And I don't know where my glasses are.
Do they make you look positively goofy?
Yes. That's why I don't wear them.
Okay.
Well, this is a gay prison show.
Wow, that's the best. You could release that as a single, Joseph.
Yes, that's my plan, Eric.
Skype theme.
My damn cat's like, I don't know if you guys heard it, but she's rubbing her head against my microphone. No. I'm trying to stop her.
Inga.
But I call her Tinka. Yeah, I call her Tinka.
You hear that? Eric just freely admitted that he's Inga.
I'm not Inga. Well, at least I'm not a Sally, unlike certain someone.
Who the hell is Sally?
Oh! Steroids, they shrink your gonads, man.
That should be FYI, guys, I do think my phone might die during this podcast because there's a charger in the living room all the time, and now suddenly there's not.